Okay, last time we were finishing up the sugya of mitzvah srichos kavana. Last few words of chav chesam at base. Amar lei redi zera l'shamei. I mean, zera said to his shamis, I guess one Rosh Hashanah. Ichavenu tikali. I guess he wasn't the blower, and his shamis and his assistant was. And he says, Ichavenu tikali. Tells him, have kavana and bimotzi me in the tkiyas. Blow shofar for me. Ichavenu tikali. That's a funny thing. I mean, he could have just said tikali, right? So he could have just said, blow shofar for me. I need you to blow. But he says, Ichavenu tikali. Have kavana and blow shofar for me. Rashi just clarifies what kind of kavana. Kavana to bimotzi me. So Alma Kasavar Mashmiya Boy Kavana. So that sounds like Rabbi Zeira is insisting that when there's a situation of a blower and a listener, the blower has to have Kavana, the listener has to have Kavana, the blower has to have Kavana to be motzi the listener. It's not enough that if somebody's blowing shofar for himself, and I see this happening, and I run over to be nearby, and then I just feel like I'm going to just piggyback on that sound, That's not going to work. It has to be ichavenu tikali. You have to have kavana to be motzi the listener. Otherwise, the listener's listening is not going to be enough. Alma kasavar mashmiya boy kavani. You need kavana to mashmiya. Mora says, Mesevei, hold on a second. We have a braisa that sounds against this. Haya over lifne achare besa knesses. So shaya besa samach le besa knesses. Walking past the shul on Rosh Hashanah, I was outside, or it's Purim, and or I live nearby and my window's open. Oshaya beso samach lebeso knesses v'shama kol shofar o kol megillah, and I'm able to hear the sound of the shofar or the sound of the balkori reading the megillah. Im kivein libo yatsa v'im lav lo yatsa. If the listener had kavana, he's yotzei the mitzvah, and if not, not yotzei the mitzvah. So isn't that pretty clear? What difference does it make if I have kavana? It shouldn't be sufficient. If you just said that Rabbi Zeira insisted that the Baal Tokeya have kavana to be motzi, and he doesn't know I exist because I'm outside of the room, so then why would I be able to be yotze? Im kivin libo yotzev, im lav lo yotzev, ichi kivin libo my heavy. Heyach, that guy who's the lower or the reader, lo kamechavin. He's not having kavana adai to didei to be motzi the person who's listening. He doesn't even know he exists. My answer is, well, no. That's very different. When the guy is in shul, that's different. Because hacha b'shliach tzibur askina. The shliach tzibur, whose name is shliach tzibur, whose whole purpose is to be functioning for the tzibur. So that's his job. Is to be motzi anybody who's able to be yotze. Now, you might have kind of artificially assumed that only people who are actually in the sanctuary itself would be yotze, but we don't have such a limitation. And that the shliach tzibur's job is to anybody who can hear is yotze. That's his whole default function. So, the daite akuli alma. And that's why if you're walking by the shul and you hear the Baal Korei read, but if I'm walking past a private home and I overhear a reader, this won't work. That's the point of this distinction. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, but hold on a second. So yes, that brisa doesn't prove one way or the other, but listen to this brisa. Tashma, niskaven shomeya velo niskaven mashmiya. Context is a little vague. It doesn't give you the setting. But in any case, we're talking about there's a listener and there's a blower, or maybe not a blower, but at least a sayer or a reader or something. It's not so clear, but let's go with shofar. The skaven shomeya velo neskaven mashmiya. If the shofar blower does not have kavana, but the listener does, or neskaven mashmiya velo neskaven shomeya, or if the blower has kavana and the listener doesn't, lo yatsa. The listener is not yotze, adshe yiskaven shemeya umashmiya. Okay, well, does that sound like support or does that sound like refutation? What is that brisa? That was brought in here actually as a kasha against Rabbi Zeira. Sounds like It is. It sounds like this is a great proof for Rabbi Zeira. But the Gemara says, no, what kavana are we talking about? Gemara says, what kavana does the listener need? The listener is just kavana letzeis. Just a regular mitzvah srichas kavana type kavana. Regular yotze kavana letzeis. So the Gemara says here, well, presumably, that's all that's going on in this brisa. And therefore, what it says is katani mashmiya dumya deshomeya. Mashmiya shomeya liatzmo. The kavana of the shomeya is shomeya liatzmo. His kavana is just kavana letzeis. He just wants to be yotze. Af mashmiya mashmiya liatzmo. So the understanding here of the Gemara is that this brisa is saying that when there's a mashmiya and a shomeya, as long as the mashmiya is blowing or is saying the words, whatever, with kavana, let's say, the mitzvah, that's sufficient for the shomeya too. Vikatani lo yatza, and what do you see is that, well, this vikatani lo yatza is a little funny, but the point being that the only kavana that you require is kavana letzeis, and you should not require that the mashmiya have specifically kavana lahotzi the listener. That shouldn't be required. The Gemara answers the Gemara does not reject that with a, well, he interprets the brisa differently. No, the Gemara answers Rabbi Zeira as saying, well, yes, but he's not relying on this brisa. He knows he's against this brisa. He's relying on a different shita, namely the following. Tanoihi, the Gemara says, it's a machlokas tanoim desanya. Like it says in this brisa, shomeya means shomeya liatzmo, and mashmiya means mashmiya lefi darko, which means, in other words, mashmiya also liatzmo. But Amar Rabbi Yossi, the Tana says that's not going to work. B'medvar mamurim b'shliach tzibur. That's only going to work for if he's a shliach tzibur. Aval b'yachid lo yatza ad sheyiskaven shomeya u'mashmiya. And the point of Rabbi Yossi clearly is to distinguish shliach tzibur from a regular baltokeya or mashmiya, that you need kavana lahotzi unless you're shliach tzibur, where you don't need that because you're having that, because that's your role. Therefore, you're assumed to have kavana lahotzi. So at this point, we're finished with the sugya of mitzvah srichas kavana. It has not really wrapped up the whole sugya properly. There is no clear maskana on the question of mitzvahs generally, whether it's srichas kavana or not srichas kavana. We don't either have clarity on whether the mashmiya has to have kavana lahotzi or not. Rabbi Zeira required it, but the Gemara had a machlokas tanaim whether it actually would be required or not. And so the Rishonim here have tons to say about what the psak is on the question of mitzvah srichas kavana. And it appears that on the issue of whether you need kavana lehotzi for a shemeya ka'ona situation, the mashmiya does need to have kavana lehotzi, like Rabbi Zeira says. But as far as generally speaking, whether mitzvah srichas kavana, that, oddly enough, is so clear. And it looks like they treat this like it's a safek. It's unclear whether lahalacha we need kavan or not. And in cases of safek, you go l'chumra for the oraisa mitzvos, and you go l'kula for the rabbanan mitzvos. And so this is one of the main sugyas of that main question of the mitzvah srichas kavan. Okay, Mishnah says it's a little bit unclear exactly what the connection is. Now, the relevance of this is, but anyway, the Mishnah says the following. You know that in this week's Parsha, we're going to read about Amalek coming in to attack the Jews as soon as they left Mitzrayim and they had after Kriyas Yamsuf. And it says that Hashem told Moshe, go send out a fighting force against them. And it says that the battle was, there were oscillations, there was ups and downs. And it says that Moshe stood there and he had his hands up. So here's what the pasuk says: V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael. When Moshe's hands were up, then the Jews would be winning and would push back the Amalekim. But then his hands go down in the reverse. The Mishnah here is bothered by that scene. It says, "What kind of a situation? What is that?" V'chi yarav shel Moshe osos milchama shovros milchama. But Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were able to fight this battle. Ella, we of course would say that, well, what do you mean? It just means that it was inspiring. That was very inspiring that he was up there, his hands are up. And then also it was demoralizing for the Amalekim to see that. And okay, it was psychological warfare going on. But in any case, the Gemara says, well, no, the Mishnah here interprets it a little differently. It says, Lomar Lach, Kol Zman Sheho Yisrael Mistaklim Klapim Ailum Shabdin Es Libam Lavim Shvashemayim Hoy Miskabrim Vim Lav Hayunaflim. Okay, the theology over here is kind of complicated. Whatever, that's what it says here in this Mishnah. Kayotze B'davar Ata Omer. Similarly, you have another kind of a thing, where you have some kind of miraculous effect of something that's like an ordinary trigger. Aselecha, that was the time when the Jews were being attacked by the snakes. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told, you know, make a bronze snake and set it up there, and when people will look at it, then they'll be cured. That's what it says in the pasuk. V'chi nachash meimis o nachash mechaya. What can this bronze snake heal or doom the bitten person? Ella, no. We have to understand the what's going on. B'zman she Yisrael mistaklim klapim alo mishabdin mislibam lavim shvashamayim hayu misrapim v'yim lav hayu nimokim. If they are inspired, then they become healed. And if they look away, so then nimokim, then they nimok. Nimok, what's nimok? They dissolve, they melt, something like that. Okay, obviously it's referring to, you know, they are inspired, they increase their emuna, then they, something like that. And you see how kind of volatile and easily manipulated people's emunos are, that these kinds of things can have a... have an effect. Okay, it says here in the Mishnah, now back to real halachos here. Cheresh ota v'katan, ein motzi en esarabim bidecho vasan. The cheresh or a shota or a katan cannot be the shofar blower to be motzi people, their obligation and shofar on Rosh Hashanah, even if they're excellent blowers. What's a cheresh and what's a shota, what's a katan? Katan is a kid who's not yet bar mitzvah, that's pretty clear. The cheresh is clarified in different places. That means somebody who's not eino shemeya ve'eino medaber. Usually it means somebody who is born deaf, and you were never able to get through to that person, so that person is treated as a lav bar das, as opposed to a cheresh who cannot hear, but is a bardas, because later in life, let's say, they lost their hearing, but all life they were lucid. Just because they're hard of hearing or they can't hear at all, that doesn't make them love bardas. When it comes to shofar, however, things are a little more complicated. The chevish situation for shofar is more complicated only because wait a minute, you mean the chevish is obligated to hear shofar? He can't hear shofar. He's deaf. So this cheresh might actually be somebody who's just physically unable to hear, because what kind of a chiyuv? This person is pater altogether from the mitzvah. Presumably that's the case. So this is, even though you're lumping together cheresh with shota and katan, it's hard to really, really insist that this cheresh be a lav bar das cheresh, because regular cheresh also have the same halach. And shota is a little bit harder to translate. Shota, over the years, people have been saying that shota is insane or deranged, and the Gemara in Chagiga gives other indicators of what makes what a shota is and does. And we would say shota is not quite deranged or insane. We would be much more, I think, in line with what it says in the Gemara if we consider shota to be somebody maybe who's autistic. Because we're not talking about somebody who's insane. We're talking about somebody who just is looking at the world differently from conventionally. In any case, it says that they're not motzi acher midecho vasan. Zeh haklal, kol she'eina mochiv v'darva, eina motzi asarab midecho vasan. And the general rule he is here, and this is a very broad rule, whenever anybody's yotzei their mitzvah vicariously through some agent, some other person is being motzi them, then that person has to be mechuyav bedavar. The motzi has to be chayiv in the mitzvah that they're doing in order to, for the yotze, to mechayim the mitzvah. On Rabbanan, hakol chayavim b'tkiyas shofar. Kohanim, Ulevim, Yisraelim, Gerim, Vyavarim, Shechurarim, Vitumtum, Vyandroganus, Mishachetu, Evan, Vyachetu, Ben Chorin. So, this part of the Baraisa, it says, everybody has a mitzvah of Tkias Shofar. Of course, it's just, you know, kind of a humorous irony that it says, everybody, as long as you're a man, because women are not going to be obligated. So anyway, okay, all men are chayavin b'tkiyas shofar. Even kohanim and levim and yisraelim and gerim and avadim. Gerim are converts, avadim and shechrarim are people, are non-Jews who became pressed into slavery with a Jewish owner, and they're partially converted into Judaism by becoming an eved, and now they're mishuchrar. Now they're freed, they become freed Jews, Eved Mishuchrar, they're obligated, but while the Eved is not yet Mishuchrar, they're Pater. And Tumtum is a person whose gender is not determined yet. And Androgynous is a person who seems to have androgynous features, male and female features. And Mishachetzio Eved, Bechetzio Ben Chorin, person who's half slave and half free. Half slave in this case meaning Eved Kanani. So that means, how does that come about? If you have a partnership between two Jews, they purchase, and one of them is the Eved Kanani. So this is a half freed, half enslaved Eved.
Going back for a second, we talked about a slave who was captured, made into slavery. And you're pushing him through garrison.
Yeah, even though they don't willingly and voluntarily accept Judaism.
Right, okay.
This is pushing a case where you can force garrison conversion.
Right, force conversion, okay. I thought that's not mutter because you have to want to do it.
Right, normally that wouldn't be. Slavery is the exception. You can impose Judaism upon a slave.
Because it's your property.
Yep, it's your property. And then it doesn't revert back afterwards, even when you're free, and you're freeing the person into a full Judaism. So, okay. In any case, right, we're not used to any of these things. Okay, so in any case, what does it say over here? It says half slave, half free is obligated because of their partial free state. But then the Bryce goes on to say the following interesting things. It says, well, maybe all these people are obligated to hear shofar, but some of them are kind of complicated. So let's see. It says here, tumtum ena motzi loas mina veloas she'ena mina. A tumtum cannot be the shofar blower for any other people, including another tumtum. Now we can understand the logic there. The tumtum is somebody whose gender is not determined. So if this tumtum is discovered to be a male, so then he's obligated fully. But we're not sure that he's going to be determined to be a male. It could be a female, in which case, then the tumtum was not chayv altogether in the mitzvah at all. And therefore, they're blowing the shofar for the listener is not going to be effective because they're ain't a mechuyav b'davar. Another tumtum may be discovered to be a male, in which case the tumtum can't be motzi another tumtum because the blower may be a female and the listener may be a male.
Is tumtum mean he's not yet, he or she is not yet determined?
Not yet determined.
They will never be determined.
No, not yet determined, but we can...
How will we ever determine
Well, I guess they can do either a surgical procedure or maybe just naturally whatever growth of skin is concealing the genitals will rupture. I don't know anything about this. I don't know. It's just supposed to be that way.
Now we can do a genetic test to see which chromosomes they have.
Yeah, that complicates everything. Yeah, I mean, we have other definitions of male, female. In any case, the tumtum case, whether this really is really a case or not, but it's a theoretical concept of a suffix male, female, which is potentially open to resolution. And so the point is that if you have such a case, then you'd be able to, the Tumtum would be obligated misafek, would not be able to be motzi anybody else also misafek. And that's Tumtum as opposed to androgynous. The androgynous can be motzi mino, because all androgynouses, whatever they are, they're all the same. There's a question about what their status is, but the point is that they're all the same. So androgynous can be motzi es mino, of a lowest she'en amino, but cannot be motzi a man. And mishachetzu eved v'chetzu ben chorin, a half slave, half free, ain't a motzi lowest mina v'lo she'en amino. And a half slave, half free can't be motzi anybody else, because they're not fully mechuyev. So they're only kind of, we view them as like partially obligated, and therefore they're blowing, they're partially obligated, so that's not sufficient to be motzi somebody who's fully obligated. Amar mar. Okay, let's look into this braisa that we just quoted a little bit more carefully. The braisa opens with the words Hakol chayavim b'tkiyas shofar kohanim u'levim v'yisraelim. Everybody's obligated in shofar, as if to say, even kohanim and levim and yisraelim. The Gemara says, pshita, of course, even kohanim levim yisraelim. Yehani lo mechayvi, man mechayvi. If these people are not in the mitzvah, then who would have been? So what kind of an expression is that? Even Kohanim Levim Yisraelim. That's all there are. So that's everybody. So Gemara says, well, no. Kohanim, it's Trichele. Yeah, Yisraelim wasn't the point. The point was even Kohanim Levim. Why Kohanim Levim? Because Kohanim, it's Trichele, because Salka Dadachimina, we had a Havamina that Kohanim might be exempt from Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. It's not true. That's what this braisa is saying, but we would have had such a havamina. Where would the havamina have come from? Because salkadeta chamina hol v'ksiv yom trua yelachem. What the pasuk says on Rosh Hashanah, it's a day of trua. Man deleisa el b'tkiyah dechad yoma hu d'mechayiv. Maybe the point is that you're only obligated if this is the special day of shofar. Now kohanim, hane kohanim hol v'yisnu b'tkiyah stikol hashana. Kohanim are used to these shofar-like sounds because in the context of Karbonis, you have to blow chatzotzros. Dechsivu, sekatem b'chatzotzros, halolo seichem. You have to blow chatzotzros on the Karbonis on special occasions, on days of, like the days that we say Yalav Yav, is when they would say, they would do chatzotzros. So, eimelo lechayvu. They don't have the mitzvah of shofar because they are doing chatzotzros blowings anyway, periodically throughout the year. So kamash malan, that's why the braisa had to tell you even kohanim are obligated. The Gemara says, that doesn't make any sense. Me dummy? Is that really comparable? Would you really have had such a havamina that the blowing of the chatzotzros periodically throughout the year should have made you exempt from the mitzvah of shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Hasam chatzotzros, the shofar. You're not even blowing the same thing. Ella, the Gemara says, yeah, that's true. That would have been too far fetched to havamina. That's not what the havamina was. Ella, it's true. Here's another havamina. Salgadaita chamina holusanan. Okay, so listen to this calculation. This is what we might have said on our own if we were not told that kohanim are obligated in shofar. This is what we might have said on our own. Salgadaita chamina holusanan shava hayova l'rosh Hashanah. Litzikia ulebrachos. We do an almost duplicate of Rosh Hashanah on the Yom Kippur Shel Yovel. The Yom Kippur Shel Yovel, you do both shofar, you even have Malchus Rechonos and shofaros. You do a lot of the Rosh Hashanah activities on the Rosh Hashanah, on the Yom Kippur of Yovel. So here's what we might have thought. Since the Mishnah equates Shava Hayovel LeRosh Hashanah LeTkiyu LeBrachos, it equates the shofar blowing and the brachos of Rosh Hashanah to the Yom Kippur of Yovel. So I might think the following: Manda Isa b'mitzvahs Hayovel, Isa b'mitzvah the Rosh Hashanah. You know, the whole Yovel on the whole Yom Kippur of Yovel kind of triggers the Yovel status, like the Yovel, special qualities of the Yovel. Well, what are those special qualities? Well, there are a few things. In particular, one of the major things, at least at one time, was a kind of a resetting of all kinds of property designations and family boundaries and all kinds of things that were kind of initially set up and that changed over the course of the past half century, things get reset at Yovel. So that's one of the big effects of Yovel. Now, it says here the following. Hani Kohanim, hoel v'leisnehu b'mitzvah the Yovel. Kohanim don't have some aspects of that. Why? Disnan, because here's a Mishnah that describes this. It says, Kohanim u'leviim mochrim li'olam v'goalim li'olam. Okay, so to understand what's going on over there, if you have, the Chumash describes that if you have your regular family land, and due to circumstances or whatever, you sell some of it, part of it, whatever, to somebody, you're always entitled to buy it back. That's called ge'ula. So when you buy back your regular family land, you're not, however, allowed to buy it back too quickly. There's an expectation that the buyer is buying it for something, and so he should be allowed to use it at least for a while. He shouldn't be so vulnerable that he would be losing the land even immediately. He's going to put in a lot of work into it, perhaps, and he should at least be able to see some results. So there's a two-year minimum, incidentally, on buybacks. And then but that land is the land that goes back at Yovel. Also, there's another rule. Let's say your family land was located in a city that was a walled city. Well, it has different rules. In that case, the rule is that you get the right to buy back your home only up to a year. And after a year elapses, then you lose your chance forever, and it's not subject to the Yovel reversal. Well, Kohanim Levim, the Chumash says, has the following. It says, the Pasuk says, Ge'ulas Olam Tiela Levim. Levim have different rules when it comes to these, and both of these things are different for Levim and Levim. Rashi clarifies what's going on. These are all coming from Masech Te'erichin. Kohanim Levim Mochrim Liolam Ve'golim Liolam. So they are not subject to the Yovel restriction when it comes to the minimum. They also don't lose their land. There's a different rule, Rashi points out, that if you're makdish, you stay achuza. Then the expectation is that you're doing so, you know, out of a kind of a great religious enthusiasm, but you're going to get it back eventually. I mean, the expectation is that this is your family land. Well, when it comes to hekdesh, if you don't buy back your land and the hekdesh gives you enough time, and they don't need it because what do they need this land? So they're going to just make money off it. So they sell it away, they auction it off, they sell it away to somebody. Well, then the owner can no longer redeem their land. But Kohanim Levim can. And there are all kinds of different rules when it comes to Kohanim Levim that they have different status. And since some of it has to do with Yovel, and some of the Yovel rules which should have related to the shofar, the shofar sound of the Yom Kippur during the Yovel year, and some of it doesn't apply to Levim, to the Kohanim Levim, then maybe they shouldn't have to be part of that mitzvah of shofar, and therefore that would carry over to Rosh Hashanah. They wouldn't have the mitzvah. Okay, that's the Havamiyah. Anyway, that's wrong. So the Kohanim Levim do have a mitzvah of shofar and Rosh Hashanah also. I would have thought, Tani Kohanim Hol, v'leisnehu b'mitzvah the Yovel. This not Kohanim Levim, Ochrim Liolam, Goalim Liolam. Rashi says the specific intent of that line is going on the Levi, who's Matish his land, and does not buy it back, and the Hekdesh sells it to somebody else. That Levi can still get back the land. So, okay, that's called Goalim Liolam. Okay, that doesn't really show me anything about Yovel not applying to the Levi, but all right. You have to read the rest of what's going on here in order to see how, yeah, but a couple of those rules do, and so that's why you might think that the Levium don't have to deal with mitzvah. Ema, I would think, b'mitzvah de Rosh Hashanah lo lichayvu. They shouldn't have to be obligated to do shofar Rosh Hashanah, kamash malan, that they are obligated. The Kamash Milan over here, interestingly, is so what was the Kamash Milan? So Kamash Milan then what? That we were wrong about some of our calculations about the Levi? That we were wrong about the correlation between Levi, the Yovel, and the Rosh Hashanah of, and the shofar of Yovel? The shofar of Rosh Hashanah? What was the Kamash Milan Mashmiya? So It's okay. It's a little bit unclear exactly where we go on that. But it looks like not really anything. It was just Kamashmalan that the whole equation shouldn't apply to Rosh Hashanah. But we aren't reversing our position on any of the assumptions. Only on simply should that have informed our shofar on Rosh Hashanah obligation. So we're saying no. All right, two doubts. Misha chetzi u'eved chetzi ben chorin. This is not back to the mission. This is back to that brisa going up above a little bit. And it says the half slave, half free is obligated, but cannot be motzi another half slave, half free. It is motzi lois mino, v'lois she'ena mino. Mino meaning is somebody who's just like himself, a half slave. V'lois she'ena mino, and not somebody who is totally free. Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna, the Amora, says, hold on a second, uli atzmo motzi. It's pretty clear from the way that Brisa goes that he's able to be motzi himself. He can blow shofar for himself. What would we say about that? Is that something that we would have said that? You can blow shofar for yourself. Presumably, how could you not? You're blowing shofar for yourself. Which part of you is the problem? You're blowing the part of you that's a slave doesn't need it. The part of you that's free is getting it. Like, it sounds like that's good. The Gemara says, Amalir of Nachman. Rav Nachman says, wrong. Rav Huna, he says, no. Maishna liacherim dilo, dilo asi tzarav disomapik tzacherus. Maishna liacherim dilo. Why wouldn't you let him blow for another half slave? Because the loasi tzat abdus, because this blower is not a fully free person. He's a half slave. Umapik tzat cheres. And he's blowing for somebody else. It's true that the other person is a half slave also, but you can't align all of the, however you would envision this, the parts of the sound of the shofar coming from the person, from the half-slave portion, is not landing on the person who's half-slave. And so whatever it is, however you're envisioning this setup, the Reb Nachman says, you can't tolerate that, and I can't therefore tolerate him blowing for himself, because the sound that he's producing, that he's also hearing, is not going to be purely resolved into the slave part. Here's the slave portion that's produced and the free portion. So he can't even blow for himself. Liatz manami lo asi tzad avdus di day umapik tzad cheres di day. Right? So hello, I'm Rav Nachman. Af liatz manam motzi. And Tanya nami hachi. That was Rav Nachman, the Amora. That was his own analysis. But the Braisa confirms Misha chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin af liatz manam motzi. Okay. Now we move into an important, big, giant issue. Tani Ahava Bereide Rabbi Zeira. Ahava, the Amora Bereide Rabbi Zeira, quotes the following Braisa. Kol ha-brachos kulan. All brachos. And we're going to realize that this is actually not really brachos. This is all mitzvos kulan. But as you know, it has very wide applicability, I guess, when it comes to brachos. So it's formulated this way: Afal pi sheyatza motzi. So this is very clearly relating to the last two lines of the Mishnah. The Mishnah has this following has the policy that we all are familiar with, that whenever there's a situation of somebody who's yotzi their mitzvah by listening to somebody else, which we do for Kiddush and Avdalah and for I don't know, Megillah, all kinds of situations. The policy always is that the person who is the sayer or the blower has to be mechuyev bedavar. So this Bryce over here says, well, you know that if you are mechuyev bedavar and then you yotza your mitzvah, you're no longer mechuyev. You've done it already, you're not mechuyev. But this allows, this Bryce is saying, well, afal pi sheyatza motzi. We still consider you mechuyev bedavar in some ways, to be motzi, a listener. And it's not a violation of the policy of you have to be mechuyev bedavar. Rashi explains, you know why? Because kol Yisrael arevim ze laze. Because you need to be mechuyev. And what does mechuyev mean? It means I'm obligated to do this mitzvah. So if you haven't heard the mitzvah, and you haven't done the mitzvah yet, and I have already, but arvus requires that I am mechuyev. That's what an arev is. An arev is a co-signer on the loan. There's the borrower. He owes the money. And then there's the cosigner. He also owes the money in the event of a default, in the event that there's no pay. So he actually owes. So he's mechuyev. So that's the same as mitzvos. That if a person is not yet yotze, the one who was already yotze has an arvus obligation. Chutz me birkas alech and birkas hayayin. Except for birkas alechem and birkas hayayin, she'im lo yatza motzi, v'im yatza eina motzi. In those cases, look, if I want to say hamotzi and you're listening, we do this all the time. I say hamotzi, you're listening, then my hamotzi covers you also. You say amen, and then you can eat. Because im lo yatza motzi, because if I need it for myself, then I can also include you. But if I don't need I'm not saying hamotzi now, and you need a hamotzi. I can't be the one who's saying the hamotzi for the listener. And Rashi generalizes that. So all berachas and ahenins. All berachas and ahenins, there's no policy of yatza motzi. That because why? Rashi says, lo lisani, velo livrich. Because the person didn't have to eat the food. If the person is eating the food, that's their business. So then if they want to say the bracha, then fine. But nobody else has an arvus obligation towards them. Tosis in other places, however, points out, you can say that for bracha rishona maybe. But after they've eaten already, you can't say that the bracha achrona is just their option. That's already now mechuyev. And I would have an arvus obligation to make sure that they say the bracha achrona. So Tosis makes that distinction. The bracha achrona, that's what we seem to hold also in Shulchan Aruch, that a bracha achrona, you can say that afal pi sheyatza motzi, and okay, subject to whatever rules would apply to that specific situation.
They mean just making a bracha on wine.
Bar Kiddush. Oh, well, Kiddush is
a mitzvah.
But we're going to talk about that in a second. Boy, Rava. Now, Rava, ask your question. What if we're talking about the Birkas Alechem of Matzah or Birkas Hayayin of Kiddush? Just like you said. Because in that case, things are a little different. Yes, it's a Birkas Anen, and that's true, but it wasn't as if you could have chosen not to eat. Ma'okimah dechovahu mapik. Since he has to be eating these foods, so then maybe mapik, maybe you could say bar priya gafen on behalf of somebody who has not, who is getting their kiddush now, or a motzi for a matzah, for somebody who needs at the seder. Odelma bracha lav chovehi, or do you say no, not necessarily, because still it's birkas anen, and we are talking about birkas anen after all, and so maybe that to that extent. The bracha would not be subject to a yatza motzi arvus based status. Okay, it's a little bit unclear exactly what the tutsdarim are of the question. But now the Gemara says, no, tashma, nah, the truth is that for those mitzvos, even the brichas anehenin can be subject to arvus and you could be motzi. Tashma, the Amar Ravashi, the Amora says, ki avinim be'erev papi. When we were at Rapapi's house, have him a Kaddish Lun. I guess he would make Shabbos early. He would make Kiddush for us early. V'ki have Asi Arise Meidabra. And when his Aris would, one of his workers would come in from the field later on, he did late Shabbos, have him a Kaddish Lehu. He would make Kiddush for them also. Now, making Kiddush for them, for this to be a proof of anything, it would mean he would make full Kiddush for them, including the Bar Priya Gafen, and they would drink based on his Bar Priya Gafen, even though he didn't need a Bar Priya Gafen at that point, he already got it. And so this is the maskana, that for the Birkas HaNehanin of Chovos, then you do say Yatza Motzi. Tana Rabbanan, the parak ends here with this braisa. Lo yifros adam prusa liyorchin, ela imkenoch elimohen. You can't say the bracha hamotzi for guests unless you're going to be eating with them also. Aval parisu lebanavu lebnei beisav kidei lachanacham b'mitzvos. But interestingly, if you want to teach your kids how to say brachos, you can say the bracha for kids for chinuch purposes, kidei lachanacham b'mitzvos. Even if you're not going to be the one you're not eating. It's a pure bracha levatala, but it's not really because you are teaching them. You're teaching them. Now, this could go in different ways. It depends how you say this. Is this because you're teaching them the words of the bracha? Or is this a different thing? This is, we're talking about kids who are old enough that they have chinuch obligations. If there's a kid who's obligated to say the bracha for chinuch reasons, chinuch is a chiv on a parent to ensure that the kid is doing what they have to. That's exactly the same as the arvus thing, even for something like this. So maybe that's what's going on. That it's banavil b'nei beiso, maybe that is a chinuch obligation, makes the parent mechuyev b'davar. Okay, doesn't say exactly what the cheshbon is. But halal megillah, regular mitzvos, that's the regular rule of afal pisha yatsa motzi. Madrin elach, perek ra'uhu, beistin. The next perek dalid, it starts with Yantav Shechel Rosh Hashanah Shechel Yos B'Shabbos. The Mishnah says if when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, so we're all familiar with the fact that on Rosh Hashanah you blow shofar, not when it falls out on Shabbos. The Mishnah says that originally that was not the case. They would blow shofar b'mikdash. I can't even say originally. At some earlier time, b'mikdash hayutokin avalo b'medina. During the Beis HaMikdash time, they would blow shofar in the Mikdash on Shabbos, but not b'medina. B'medina meaning outside of the Mikdash. You don't have to get too far away from the Mikdash to be in the Medina. That's outside of the Mikdash. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, after the Churban, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Nasi instituted the policy, Sheyutokin b'chol makom sheyesh bo beistin, that he insisted that they blow shofar even outside of the Mikdash. There's no Mikdash anymore. The center of, I guess, the Torah authority relocated to Yavne at that time. And so any place there was a Beis Din, that's where they would blow. I'm Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, no, that's not what happened. Rabbi Elazar was living later. He was saying, no, you got it wrong historically. Lohiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai yel b'Yavne bilvad. No. He only said that in Yavne, they need to blow, but you don't have authority to blow in other places. Amrulo, they said to him, that's not true. Echad Yavne v'echad kol makom sheyesh bo Beis Din. Any place where there was a Beis Din. The Od Zos Haisa Yerushalayim Yisera al Yavne. Incidentally, when you're comparing Yerushalayim to Yavne,
they said to him, they said to Rabbi Elazar, or they said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai?
No, this is all of the later discussion, Rabbi Elazar versus the others. What Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did, he did. What?
Bezdin is talking about Sanhedrin.
That's what he was in Yavne.
Yes and no. We're going to see a little bit that, it may or may not be like a large Sanhedrin.
The Mishnah has a Tanakama, Rebbe Eliezer,
right,
and then a rebuttal.
And an Amar Lo.
Right.
Now, that shouldn't bother us. It's just a response. There's often back and forth exchanges, but the Gemara is going to consider this to be a third view. The Gemara considers this to be a third Shita. In any case, okay, it says here, comparing Yerushalayim to Yavne. How do you say Yerushalayim Yisera al Yavne? She call ear, shehi roa v'shoma asukrova v'yechola lavo, token. Ubi Yavne lo ayu token el b'vezdin bilvad. In Yerushalayim, apparently, it's not just in the Mikdash that they would blow. It's all around they would blow. But b'yavne lo ayu token el b'vezdin bilvad. Now, is this something that Yerushalayim, meaning Yerushalayim b'binyano or Yerushalayim b'churbano? What aspect, what time are we talking about of this Yerushalayim? There's a little bit of an issue here that the Tosfos has a comment about this. But in any case, because it sounds like Yerushalayim versus Mikdash. Pashat Pshat is that we're talking about Yerushalayim, times of Mikdash, that it means in the Mikdash as well as the environs of the Mikdash and anywhere which is in the vicinity of the Mikdash, meaning namely pretty much all of Yerushalayim, that and even the suburbs of Yerushalayim, all of it would have shofar. But Yavne was only in the Beis Din itself. The Gemara now says, Minahani Mili. Okay, this Minahani Mili is asking, how do you know that you're not supposed to be blowing shofar altogether when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos? Amar Rabbi Levi, that was assumed in the Mishnah. It doesn't exactly say. The Mishnah just says that you blow in the Mikdash and they don't blow Bigvulin. Minahani Mili, that you don't blow, I guess it's both are really the question here. How do you know both? That you don't blow Bigvulin, but that you do blow B'mikdash even on Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Levi Bar Lachma. Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina. Well, because Kosev Echad Omer, Shabbason, Zichron, Trua. The Kosev Echad Omer, Yom Truah, Yelachem. Rosh Hashanah is described as the day of Yom Truah, but it's also described as the day of Shabbason, Zichron Truah. Well, Zichron Truah means talking about it. Yom Teruah means doing it, presumably. So what is it? So what are you supposed to do on Rosh Hashanah? Are you supposed to blow the shofar? Are you supposed to talk about the shofar? Lo kashia kan biyantav shechal b'shabbos, kan biyantav shechal yos b'chol. So this is the first understanding the Gemara had, is that based on the psukim themselves, according to this, that's why when I said earlier, like originally it was this way too. Originally there was never shofar on Shabbos, according to this understanding. This was originally from day one, they never blew shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechal B'Shabbos, based on the Psukim. Psukim say Zichron and Shruah when it's on Shabbos. Amar Rava. Now Rava, who is a much later Amora, says, hold on a second, that can't be right. Imida O'Raisa hi b'mikta sheichi tak'inan. If you're going to say that D'Oraisa, you can't blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah Shechal B'Shabbos, then why are they doing it in the Mikdash? The Ode, Halav Malachahi. And besides, what's wrong? What's wrong with blowing shofar anyway? You can blow shofar even any Shabbos. Any Shabbos you want to. There's no crime for blowing. The Gemara says, the Gemara is not here. The Gemara says, not a malacha, that's for sure. The Gemara says elsewhere, well, shofar, he, like we're going to see here in a second. Detana, halav malacha, he reads rechralim with the detana de Beis Shmuel, kol malacha savor lo sa'asu, yatasat kiyas shofar, v'diyas ha'pas. She'i chachma ve'ina malacha. The pasuk forbids malachos, but there are certain kinds of things that you may think are like malachos, but they're not. Like shofar, like blowing shofar, or playing music generally, or radias hapas. Radias hapas means peeling the dough off of the oven where it would be baking. Tosis makes, there's a whole discussion here about, are we talking about the already baked bread or the not yet baked dough? Either way, the point is that radias hapas, which we don't have anything like that, but Radias HaPas was forbidden by the Rabbanan, or permissible altogether if it was already baked, but that the point is that that's not a violation of Yisr Malacha on Shabbos, and so she chachma ve'ena Malacha, and so, but the point of all of this being that shofar is not forbidden min ha-Torah on Shabbos. So so why wouldn't you blow shofar when it's Rosh Hashanah Shechal B'Shabbos? You could blow shofar anyway. Ela Amar Rava, so Rava says, the whole thing is wrong. Mida O'Raisa. Now you do realize, Rava was pretty late among the Amoraim. I mean, that means that until Rava's time, people were walking around convinced, not what Rava's about to say, but that they were, that the reason they're not blowing shofar is because of Zichron Trua. Ela Amar Rava, Mida O'Raisa, Mishra Shari. The Torah doesn't have any reason not to blow on Shabbos. The Rabbanan who did Gazer Bey, the Rabbanan forbade the shofar blowing on Shabbos, Kiddur Rabbah, like what my Rebbe Rabbah said, the Amar Rabbah, kol chayavim b'tkiyas shofar, ve'ena kol b'kiyam b'tkiyas shofar. Everybody has a personal obligation to make sure that they blow or hear the shofar sound, but not everybody can do it themselves, and not everybody necessarily has even a shofar. Gezera. So the Chazal forbade it on Shabbos. Shema Yitlena B'Yadov V'Yelach Yitzel Abaki Lil Mod Yavir Ener Dal Ramos B'Shus HaRabim. The Chazal forbade you from blowing shofar, from having a shofar obligation, because it's going to lead to widespread violations of Shabbos, because people are going to be carrying their shofars around the street, not having any permission to do that. The mitzvah of shofar doesn't permit you to walk around with the shofar, even if you need somebody to blow it for you, it's still not going to be authorized. And so there's going to be all kinds of chilas Shabbos. So that's why they said, you know what, no mitzvah of shofar on Shabbos, the heine time of the lulav, the heine time of the megillah, which is also why they forbade taking the lulav on Shabbos, and doing Purim on Shabbos. Purim doesn't fall exactly in Shabbos for us, but it does in Yerushalayim. So according to this, incidentally, now it's only in Yisra Derabbanan until that Gezerah. They used to have shofar even on Shabbos until the early Tanayim imposed the Gezerah not to, but they left it like that b'mikdash. It doesn't explain over here why in the Mikdash they were still blowing shofar, but it's very naturally, presumably, because there's a policy that ain't shavus b'mikdash, that a lot of the prohibitions, a lot of the Gezerahs Derabbanans are not applied in the Mikdash, because Gzeiras are always about fear of wrongdoing that people are going to either misunderstand or they're going to violate things in the Mikdash. There is less of a concern of that risk, and therefore they have a lot of things going on in the Mikdash, which would otherwise be forbidden to Rabbanan outside of the Mikdash, and presumably that's an example. But then how does that explain what happened after the Churban? So let's see. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, Hiskan Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, to continue to blow shofar in Yavne. So that, of course, will make sense, that there is a prohibition. The prohibition was not applicable in the Mikdash, and they felt that even in Yavne, they're going to lift that prohibition, they're going to allow shofar blowing even in Yavne, in order to keep the religious emotion of the excitement of Yerushalayim, which was all people, were very depressed after the Churban, and so at least the shofar sounding in Yavne would be inspiring for people. Tana Rabbanan, Pa'amachas, Chal Rosh Hashanah Lios B'Shabbos. So you get the impression from this Braisa that once upon a time, Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos. It becomes very clear that it's not once upon a time this happened. The first time that Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbos when they relocated to Yavne, which was, a year or two, whatever, after they were there, they were trying to figure out what they should do. What should be the policy here in our new base here in Yavne? Vayakala Arim Wisconsin. People came on their own. They came to expecting to hear shofar like they did in Yerushalayim. Amar lehem Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lebnei Beseira. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who's a nasi, tells the Bnei Beseira, Rashi is where the Gdolei Hador. He wants to get like a consensus here. Niska, let's do it. Let's blow shofar. This makes sense. They're deciding this on the spot. Amrulo, they said, hold on, nindon. Let's talk about it. Let's figure this out. Let's analyze. Let's come up with a psak. Amar lehem. He says to them, Aniska, Biachakach Nidun, let's blow. Afterwards, we'll talk about it. People are already coming, they're already here. So, fine. So, that apparently they fell for that. Liachar Shetaku Amrulo. So, they said, okay, let's talk. Amr Lehen, he says to them, in a very blatant and obvious pun, one of the several clear puns in the Gemara, Amr Lehen, Kvar Nishma Karen Biavne. The Ein Meshivin Liachar HaMaisa. He says to them, well, we already did it. It's not really right for us to now start evaluating the propriety of what we've done. We're just going to use that as a precedent. We've established precedent. That's our policy. And the pun, of course, being Keren B'Yavne means the shofar sound in Yavne, pun on expression Keren B'Yavne, which was the name of the yeshiva there in Yavne. Two dots, last couple of bit. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai yele b'Yavne b'levad. So this is back to that Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Elazar says, no, it was only Yavne that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai authorized the shofar sound. Amru lo, echad Yavne v'echad kol makom sheyesh bo beis din. They said, no, any place where there's a beis din. And of course, Amiel was saying, well, but that just sounds like it's a restatement of the original position. That's what the Gemara here points out. Amru lo, ha'inu tanaka. He's just restating. That wasn't really a development. There was just yes, he did. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. That doesn't sound like the Mishnah should have said it that way. Where it says, no, it's a third view. Ika benayu beidina diakrai. The first view where it says, any makam sheyesh beizdin, kol makam sheyesh beizdin, that's, even if there happens to be a beizdin present, they would just blow in a beizdin. But the third view, which is saying, no, echad yavna, that sounds like only a Beis Din Kavua. Only if there's an official Beis Din. It doesn't have to be a Sanhedrin Agadol, but any place where that's like central enough, where it was a large enough nucleus of a Torah presence, that they would have a Beis Din there, a standing Beis Din, not just a Beis Din De'akrai. So then they would blow even on Shabbos, according to that opinion.
Tanakama, it says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai establishes. He's talking about that Maisa, right, that event that happened.
Yeah, I would include it in that, right.
But then it seems like, according to this third Shita, he later established something even more than just that trick.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it must have been that they did have some discussions after this event. This wasn't that de facto it became now the policy. They must have had some discussions afterwards, but the discussions weren't whether yes or no, it was what to do, about how far and what the parameters were going to be. And so this was later generations debated about what was decided at that meeting. Okay.
Left.